Testing, testing. Can you hear me upstairs? Okay, let's start. I think we have quite a lot of ground to cover for today because last lecture we didn't get to talk on the physical structure of XML, so this time I'll see if I can combine two slightly different topics into one lecture. So let's go ahead directly. Still, once again, sorry for last time. There was some problem with the HDMI connector of my Mac, it cannot actually put the output to the recording device. There was some incompatibilities, so sorry for all of you because if you were trying to watch this from home. So this time it should work again. At least I truly hope so. And there were some lessons learned, so at least people in our department again know a bit better how to set up these recording devices in the room. But yeah, I guess you just had your third assignments. I hope everyone got them through nicely. Or did somebody have lots of trouble in the first three assignments? Okay, the next question. Did anyone start with the XSL and, the fourth assignment, fourth exercise? Did anyone already do those? Okay, how did it go? Was it it's okay for you as well? Okay, was the last lecture helpful enough, or did you have to do some homework of your own to get through those? Okay, yeah. We tried to keep the assignment rather simple so that everyone could kind of get a sneak peek into XSL. And it's same in the now in the now as we start more towards like service-oriented architectures and discuss XML as a data inter-exchange language, there's only a small percentage, like a small scratch that we can do within this course. But we hope that some of these examples and also these assignments help you to get a bit more familiar on what the possibilities are there. So that was our intention. So, and we would really like your opinions later on, feedback on how we can make the assignments even better suitable for you and matching the course structure. So later on, if you have some ideas, like feel free to come and discuss with me or Philip or Tony. And we'll be very. It would be helpful for us also to listen because this is the first time we're doing this kind of this XSL assignments and also extending this course a bit towards this data inter-exchange formats because that's really what XML enables. So. And this lecture, we'll discuss a bit on that. But before we go to this XML in organizations and XML in the as a data inter-exchange format, I would like to raise this XML physical structure, which also comes from the basic XML standard. So the XML as a recommendation, it only has these few things as we've been discussing about, so mainly this well-formedness of XML and the validity of XML, how to write your DTDs, so how to give your grammar for your documents. But as we have been discussing, XML is only a meta language, so you design your own, develop your own languages out of this simple recommendation. And one particular thing that's also included in this basics of XML is something called physical structure. And each XML document can be seen to consist of two types of structures. So this logical structure that we have been discussing about that is formed by these elements and attributes that form the tree structure of the document. But also we have something that is called physical structure. And the main thing about physical structure is something that we call entities. And it's very, very common that people make this mistake of thinking that elements and entities are the same thing. They definitely are not. So entities are something that you can include in your XML documents. You can store them internally in your documents or externally. And they can be images, videos, bundles of text. They are mainly something to support complex writing. And when the DTDs get very complex, then you can use these entities to help up your writing a bit. But this physical structure of entities is also a bit of a problematic area for XML since last couple of years there have been, especially when we have something stored externally to XML documents. There are a lot of data security issues and some complications that have been coming along the way. And actually, developers are moving more and more away of this usage of these entities. And I'll raise just a couple of examples in this lecture. But I think it's good for you to know this and realize when you come across XML and if you see these entities referenced but also used in your documents, and if you come across some problems, you might, hopefully this lecture will help you a bit in understanding what's going on there. What entities commonly are, they are something like just a piece of text that is given a particular name. So it's a name and value. And once declared in your DTD, you can easily use these entities within your DTD, but if you want to, also you can use them in your XML documents. And in many cases, the purpose is just to avoid repetitive writing. If some of the rules in your DTDs are like continuously the same, or you have particular, in your organization, you use a standard type of definition or, I mean, description for your organization or anything you do, you actually can just make one entity that includes the contents, what you always want to be in the same format, and then you can just easily reference that in your XML documents and in your DTDs. So this is the basic principle of what entities do and what they enable. We have something like different types of entity types, something that should be parsed by the processor. They are something like internal or external to the document, and they are used to be used only in the XML documents or only in the DTDs. So let's just quickly go through these different types and what they actually mean and how they differ. If we think about a parsed entity, I'll show just a couple of examples very, very soon, but then it might open up a bit. It's something that the should be parsed by the processor, and it should be something, it's more or less text. But you can also have entities that are something like data in different formats. They can be images, videos, and so on. But especially in the last few years, the there has been quite a bit of a resistance, or actually seeing that this way that XML gives for declaring these videos, images, whatsoever that you can use in your documents, it's not very easy to manage. It's not very easy to sustain, and it just makes things a bit too complicated, but also there lies some security issues that are a bit problematic. So I'll present these, but I'll also give some pointers that may be something that you might want to avoid in the future. The internal and external entities, this is something like similar if you think about an internal or external DTD. So in an internal DTD, you have in your XML document, you define your grammar for the document. In terms of an internal entity, you always give the name and the value at the same time when you declare these. But when you have an external entity, you link to a different place where this value is retrieved from. So you have a separate document. I'll show this in a while. And these external ones that aren't included directly in your document, they are less and less supported all the time. And then the final type before going to the examples is something like entities based on the contents where you use those. So you have these general entities that are to be used in the element content and attributes of your XML documents. Even though they are only to be used in your XML documents, the place where you introduce these is in your DTD. So you have a kind of a standard way of defining an entity in your DTD that you can always reference from your XML document, just to avoid this repetitive writing or similar. Parameter entities are just to support DTD writing. So if you have some rules that are commonly occurring, you can use parameter entities to just give these grammar rules that you can easily then just like reference if it comes again. Okay, let's go to the examples. But before I go there, there has especially Mac users, but more or less any user of the internet nowadays gets to these problems of external entities. And you can read about this quite a lot online. And I think this is something that is very common for any type of web development and standards that are created. Even though like people were trying to be quite smart and like forward-looking when XML recommendation was written, but of course not all types of problems can be like identified once you are defining a language such as XML. You didn't know like all kinds of motivations of hackers or so on that might actually want to manipulate and make some bad use of your XML. For example, if you're linking to a different document, you're saying that please give me this image that is located in this and that document. This is kind of an opportunity for hackers to plug into, but also do some damage for organization and all kinds of devices and services, products. And this is not just the Mac issue right now with these external entities. This is something general for using when you are trying to visualize some external entities in your web browser. You have quite a lot of problems nowadays. So unless you have a very, very good explanation or a workaround, this use of external entities is maybe to be avoided. And now let's look at what those actually are. If we look at this kind of something of an entity that should be parsed by the processor, it should be defined, given a name and a value for it, and it should be only to help DTD writing. What you would be seeing in your DTD would be something like this, that there's an entity declaration. And again, please remember that entities and elements, they are a different thing. So once you declare something like this in your DTD, you can ensure and you can actually avoid the type of repetitive writing. So what is happening here is that the entity that is used as a parameter entity in the DTD, it's always declared by using this percent character. You are giving the name of the entity and then in brackets the content of it. So if we would in DTD want to avoid using all the time, now it's an element that is defined here. But if you have some specific type of rules in your elements or attributes, you can use parameter entities to declare those, just that you can reference them later on by this type of approach. So you use the percent character, the name of the entity, and then semicolon. So you can later on in your DTD use this to like avoid using that same set of rules. Something like what you might use then in your XML document is similarly parsed, so it should be parsed by the processor, so it's mainly text. It's internal, so the name and value are given once it's declared, and it's general entity, so it's to be used in the context of the XML document, not just within the DTD, but also bridging the boundaries of DTD and the XML document. So if this would be our XML example, XML document that you see there, as you can see, it's a standalone XML document that includes the DTD in itself. We have the element author that is PC data, parsed character data. So again, data that should be parsed. Then we declare an entity, and the name of it is JS, and the value of it is Joe Smith. And in your XML document, you can use this type of... It's again, the referencing is always the same. The syntax is the same. So once you have your author element there, you can use the ampersand, then giving the name of the entity, and then semicolon. So now you actually just reference that entity. And as you might imagine, when you are putting this to your browser or anything, the content of that element author is now Joe Smith. So this is just a kind of a simple example how this might be used. In an organization, let's just say if you have a very, very complicated name of your organization or your unit or that you're working with, and you always just want to ensure that you aren't messing it up, so you have some corporate identity and they are very strict about it, You can use an entity just to make a declaration. Maybe it's half a page or about the company or anything. You can just declare that as an entity and always use it then in your company documents with the use of the entity and just giving the reference that you don't always have to write the contents within the element that you have. So this is a very typical type of entity usage. Then we come to those external ones that are a bit problematic. Parsed external parameter entity could be something that we use to link external DTDs together. So if we have a very, very complex DTD, we actually might want to separate it between multiple DTDs. Let's just say if it's thousands of rows long. This is one way to do it then, that you actually just reference between different DTDs. And again, here you have more or less the same. So the context within this is parameter entity. So it's only to be used in DTD and between DTDs because it's external. If this would have the name general in there, then it would mean that you can use it in the XML document. But if you use that kind of a referencing with the percent and the semicolon in your XML document, the logic isn't understood because it's just meant as a parameter entity only within the DTD. So these are kind of some of the separations that XML has. And there are some kind of a writing conventions again for people like a single authors or group of authors or single organizations against more public use of XML so that you have a bit different type of like a declaration when you are using it for your company's own purpose against if you are defining an international standard such like XHTML or something that can be applied by anyone, then you might have something like this public identifier. So these are just, they are the same thing in principle, but this is just a kind of a writing convention. If you have something that to be used internally or as a public thing, because standardization in many cases aims not just for only one organization to use, but it's something universal. And that's why we have like XHTML, but XML schema, we have like Ajax, SOAP, whatsoever. These are universal standards that help a group of people or like a particular community in achieving something, and it's just not like a XML language for one organization to use. So this is one way. If you come across this, then you know what's happening. So in here, you have a uniform resource identifier, so it can be more or less a URL that points to a document where you can retrieve that external DTD from. If you want to link some DTDs and rules within the DTDs between themselves. But not very common way to do that. So this would be, again, if it would be internally to DTD, it's only to be used in DTD, this type of linking, and not within the XML documents. There are other types of, like these external ones, and these external ones are a bit problematic since many of the browsers have very strict security settings, and they don't allow you load files, like they don't go to those entity references within the processing, and you aren't showing. For example, if I would like want to just like point to another external XML document and present its contents in another XML document, if you try that in browser, you get to a lot of problems there. So within these external ones, we have a bit of a problems. I'll show you now, like in 2 minutes, how you can use the internal ones rather efficiently. But then the most, this is still the explanation for how you can link those external, if you would have a very good reason for doing that, like general entities that are external to your XML document. For example, you have somewhere else defined some kind of a declaration for World Wide Web Consortium, and you would like to link it to your XML document. You don't define it in your DTD alone. You are pointing to another, to a URL where it should be retrieved from. You can try this with Notepad++ and put it to your browser, and you might come across some issues there. So unless one has a very good reason for doing so and has a good workaround, like a way to handle this kind of external entities, you can still use those. But there are like problems, especially if you are trying to use other types of content that is not just parsed character data. So if you have like these videos, graphics, to make your document like a multimedia document, by the use of entities, that's not the way to go. Like, even though you might read it from the XML specification that this is supported, but actually there are much better ways with the use of style sheets, or when you go towards HTML5 or something else, you have better ways of making your documents, multimedia documents, that aren't using entities. So even though you read the course book and many of these, because some of the information there is a bit outdated already. And I think in some forum or something, there was somebody who said it quite nicely, that many experienced XML developers feel strongly that unpassed entities are a complicated, confusing mistake that should never have been included in XML in the first place. But it's a part of the specification, and that's why I also want to tell you, because this course is mainly to tell what the XML specification is and how you can apply it when you are creating your own languages out of it. And also how it's respected by different XML languages that are already out there. So as you saw from those couple of like examples on the slides, that there's a particular way of how you reference those entities. So in your XML documents, you have this ampersand, the name of the entity, and semicolon. So this is how you reference that. And in the context of DTD, you use this percent character, and that tells that it's a parameter entity and to be used always and only in the context of a DTD. But you can also reference just one single character by the use of entities. And I think in some of the assignments, you might come across doing this. So there are some very standard ones. I mean, sometimes it might be that your input device doesn't have, for example, a Chinese character or something else, and you might want to include it in your XML document, just pointing out to the hexadecimal code point in the character set that it presents it to you on your web browser, even if you wouldn't have it on your input device. But also, if you are preparing some XML language for international use, and you just want to avoid the kind of any device that is trying to interpret, or environment that is trying to interpret your XML documents, wouldn't understand the characters, at least by pointing out to the character set and to the hexadecimal code point, you can then be sure that this character would be shown. So these can be also declared as entities in your DTD. And it would be something like this that you have there in the bottom. So you would have an entity, then the name of the entity, and then the hexadecimal code point. And you can easily Google for if you have a particular character, and then just ask for the hexadecimal code point to know that how you can retrieve it. And there are a few already that are included in the XML specification, this ampersand, this greater than and less than signs, and the single and double quote. And actually, I have it already here open in Eclipse. Just a very, very simple example of its use. As you might notice, this is a XML document with an internal DTD with not much content in it. It has one element. And what you see there is that I've declare two entities there. So this ampersand and then rhyme one. And the rhyme one, if you look carefully and think about what type of entity it is, first of all, it's parsed entity. It's internal, because the name, rhyme one, and the value are given once it's declared. Okay, it's parsed. It's character data. It's internal. And it's also a general entity. So we are using it in the context of the XML document. So this is the way how you can always like try to understand what type of entity are you dealing with. Is it internal or external? Are we pointing out to a different document to retrieve the contents of that? Or is it like parsed or is it unparsed? Is it just text or is it data in a different format? And is it used in the context of DTD only or in the XML documents? So this is the separation. But actually what you see going on there, that I also have this welcome to Henry's, and then there's a character entity reference to APOS. And as you can see, I haven't declared it at all in the DTD. And I'm rather sure it still will be shown if I open a browser. There's no external presentation, so it's again just like gives out the like in this kind of a format. But as you can see, it puts the single quote there to Henry's, even though I didn't declare it. And this is because these few character entities are already included in the XML specification. You don't have to specify. You don't have to declare them anymore in the XML. I can delete this line here. So the I think it was the ampersand. And let's see if I put it again here. It still shows it. I don't have to declare the entities that are already specified in the specification. And as you saw here, this ampersand, then the less than, greater than, and those quote marks, they are already specified. For other entities that you use, if you are referring to a particular Chinese character or euro mark or something like something else, if you have if you need to do it at some point, you have to declare it as an entity and then pointing out the hexadecimal code point. But for these few ones, you don't need to do that. Okay, that was just a kind of a very brief look into the physical structure of XML. We want to keep this rather simple, as entities are something that you might come across, especially those character references. That's a thing that you will most likely come across. But also some of those internal entities you might see sometimes used, but you aren't expected to do much with this within this course. So it's just for you to be aware of something like that exists in the specification. And let's then move on to the second part of the lecture. But does anyone have now any questions, anything specific about those, maybe those character references, but entity usage in general? I put these readings here again, so because last time I think I had it in the slides, but we didn't go through it. So the old course script that is also in Optima, that's a good place to look for some basic information about these issues. It was written by Airi Salminen, who used to do this course some time ago, but it kind of respects the original specification. So it's very, very good when it comes to that. But then we have also the course book that you can find online that is a bit more modern and up to date with like more fresh ways of using XML. And you can look into XSL examples from there. But remember that in the exam itself, we won't be asking too much about like specifics about XSL or namespaces or so. But you can be assured that there will be something where you have to show that you have understood the ways of using XML in a particular context and where you can elaborate then how these issues help you. and then you can convince us that you have understood how those can be applied. So that's the kind of a level you should be looking into when you're reading through these things. And further, if you are interested in HTML5 and also like putting this external presentation to your XML documents, there are some good information on that course book still later in that book. Okay, let's then go to the XML usage in organization, but also some hints of how it's applied in social media and some challenges and some things about standardization. But once more, in this lecture, I kind of give a brief overview of the things, of like the potentials of different types of XML languages in organizations. But then the two following lectures are there more specified to understand, first of all, this service-oriented architectures, where XML is a kind of a key component. So that would be this week on Thursday. And then next week on Tuesday, there will be Joni Kettunen, who then discusses more of how he, as a developer, but also from multiple points of view, multiple like roles that he's had in organizations, how he has come to use XML and how he perceives XML in real life. Since this course is more about giving the theoretical basis and some of the basics for DTD and XML writing, but as you might imagine, then in organizations you have a bit more complex problems, and in many cases the solutions around those are slightly more complex as well. But I think they are a good way of understanding then the practical use in organizations. So I very much recommend you come to those lectures, and I'm not fully sure if how they feel about the recording, so better be here. Okay. But let's first of all discuss something like, because we all are like in our private lives, but also in for our like course assignments, but also in for the courses themselves, we apply social media on a daily basis through the kind of handheld devices that we have, but also through browsers that we have on our MacBooks and PCs and so on. And let's just think about what kind of things XML enables for social media. And what we can say is that social media as a phenomenon, as a kind of a buzzword, it's very much based on something that we call Web 2.0. That's also just a kind of a made-up word to describe the kind of technologies and standards that make the foundation of social media and kind of enable social media, sites, but also services, to do the things that they are kind of enabling you as a user then to do all kinds of functionalities and so on. But if we think about XML, the main purpose of it is to allow applications and services share data with each other. That's the kind of a basic principle of XML, even though it's quite a lot used to give a kind of a document format for XML documents and describe metadata, but this is where it becomes most handy and where its biggest impact has been as well. So if we think about any types of services that we use on a daily basis, you can be very, very sure that you're applying XML every single day and more or less every single time you're using your devices for meeting your friends online or just catching up with them or searching online some information in Google and or so on. So if we think about the types of languages that are created from XML that are maybe some of the most prominent and most applied in social media are more or less listed here. So remember that what XML is that any language that is created out of it, and all of these as well, they respect the basic principles of XML, this well-formedness, validity issues. So these languages are derived from that specification that we are kind of discussing in this lecture. And they are, of course, done to extend the possibilities of XML, because the XML itself is just so simple and it can be applied for more or less anything. That's why we need specific languages to allow us to do very, very specific things. If we think about Ajax, for example, that is an XML-based language, it's something that allows dynamic web application. It's something that we, I think, all of us can say that it's... Sorry, if I just open this up. It's something that's extremely relevant when it comes to browsing any websites online or like to allow us to do things in a simple manner. And even though in the assignments or in the exam we don't necessarily ask about what is Ajax or what does it enable us to do, but what it stands for is this asynchronous JavaScript and XML. So it just allows the client side of the applications to communicate with the server side in a seamless manner, so that we don't always have to refresh our pages like our web browser to allow us to do or see if there have been any changes. So one very, some particular examples of what Ajax enables is all kinds of login forms that if you're browsing your like websites without being logged in, and if you want to do a particular task online, it might just pop out to you the login form that you fill in, and you continue directly from that place, not being always redirected to the first page where you have to log in and register, but allowing it to do on the fly. Similarly, like Google uses this autocomplete that you might be very, very familiar with. When you type in it all the time, makes kind of a guesses of, it has this constant seamless communication between the client and server side to guess what you are typing in so that you can faster and faster then retrieve the information you need to. But Ajax is something that is used for all kinds of voting rating functionalities online, but also for Twitter feeds so that you, when you have your browser open, it automatically all the time refreshes when there are new things coming in. So that you don't, it just doesn't wait for you like 7-8 years ago or something. You always had to refresh the browser to see if there's something new emerging. But these are things that Ajax also enables, that this is done every few seconds anyways. So it's just constant discussion by the means of XML between the client and the server side. So this is one example. But when you think about like RSS feeds, if you want to aggregate all the news or relevant information on your device, this is also deployed by just like XML documents where the information is gathered and where you retrieve just the basic information you want to get. And this RSS as XML-based language enables you to do that. And these other ones are also very, very good examples. And then the SOAP and WSDL are very good examples then about this service-oriented architectures that we are going to discuss about on Thursday, because that's more or less the basis of enabling data interchange between different types of services and applications and systems. So if we think about, like, this is one project that I was working for myself. If we think about web development, where there are like different types of like companies, institutions involved, and all of them like somehow develop their own services that are created and bundled in a particular environment. OpenScout is a very good example of this type of distributed services, that we need a kind of an overall framework for different services. So because we have developers from many different countries, and we are working, let's say, 2.5 years together to make like a bigger puzzle together, but we still have like different developers that have their own tasks, activities that they're working with, but we need to somehow make sure that whatever they develop, this they share a common vocabulary and common set of rules that enable us to make a kind of a bigger package of this, of all of these services. So OpenScout was a pretty good example of something like this. I'll just open the... So this project was focused on giving like learning materials for management education, and it's focused on this concept of open education, so that any teacher or any student can find materials that are created by their peers online to help them, like help them in their course assignments, but also if one is a teacher and just wants to base on what the others have been doing, they can find some materials there and just start like modifying and adapting it to their own purposes. So within this Open Scout environment, there was all kinds of services created. There were like services created for finding materials online that can be in multiple different types of formats, from like PowerPoint presentations to Word documents and so on, videos, slides, book sections, and so on. We needed some kind of a service that we have a common way of describing the information assets, so those learning materials we have. So XML kind of gave us the basis there to describe. This was done by XML schema. So we needed a common way to describe the types of materials we need to have, and that enables us to search through very different types of and heterogeneous databases and present all of those in this one search engine. So all of these materials that are kind of harvested from all around, like come from different institutions, own databases, from some public websites, from some company databases, and so on. But we needed a common way of describing what those materials are, and then to feed them, extract them, that the users can find them online. That was a particular service. But also we have, like, when people are like using this portal, they can put like all kinds of reviews around the materials that they have come across. So they might use comments, ratings, tags, whatsoever. And all of these actually somehow deploy XML. So I think it's a rather good example of like a very wide usage of XML in one particular website. I'll show some of the examples still later in this lecture if we have time. But if we think about like any types of wikis or blogs that you are using nowadays, they are actually building much more towards openness all the time as we speak. So it's very, very easy nowadays to extend the basics of a particular like website just because of these APIs and the open infrastructures that they kind of adopt that are very, very much based on XML. So I think a good way to start always understanding of what XML kind of gives usage in, or what type of usage it enables in organization, is this kind of a separation of XML as a document language, as a metadata language, as a format for databases, and for data interchange between different applications. And unless you ever looked at this page, I think this is a rather good place to look at the trying to understand where the kind of a basics of XML stop and where the extensions come in. So as already we have been discussing quite many times in this lecture, that XML is not just like extended by like these organizations that create like wide usage of standards like XHTML for web development, but or VSDL or SOAP for data interchange. These languages are created by all kinds of consortiums that come together. Maybe it's for their like private usage as a starting point, but they can be extended from the practical use of XML. I mean, when XML was firstly created, it didn't discuss too much about some issues about security or how to transform the XML into particular types of outputs. All of these have been kind of created like afterwards and to kind of stand alone, but still stand on the early specification what XML gives, what we have been discussing in this lecture. But for the for your preparation for the exam, I think it would be a good thing for everyone to do is to go to this site and look at the different types of extensions and what kind of things they enable. So if it's about efficient inter-exchange, if it's curing like XML documents and contents, if it's about transformation of those, or about processing or something else. I think this is a very, very good place to just look at when you are preparing for it. But for just thinking about like what is the best way for anyone to prepare for exam question where you have to show that you somehow understand the possibilities of XML, I wanted to already give a one interaction point that you and your classmates around you can somehow prepare for the upcoming. So if we have this kind of a case and a problem, so that the newspaper that wants to somehow digitalize their news contents for archiving purposes, but also to deliver news to readers through various channels, so in which ways XML and XML specific languages could be a solution in this case. This is a rather common question that might be appearing in our exam, even though it wouldn't be exactly the same. So let's use 2 minutes, two or 3 minutes for you to discuss in groups, to elaborate on the possibilities, and then let's just quickly catch through what kind of ideas you came up with, and then I'll show also one kind of not the sample answer, but some sample considerations for it. So use 2 or 3 minutes for this, and let's then go through it. You can speak freely. Are you still discussing the exercise, or does somebody still need a minute? If you do, but otherwise we can just start speaking to. I mean, some of you might already have a kind of a good impression based on the previous lectures that we've had in how XML. Of course, XML is not just the only thing that can support in this kind of a phase, but it's a part of the solution. So thinking about what we have been discussing so far, what could be a starting point? So does anyone want to... Okay, somebody needs to maybe give one simple example. You can just say some keyword of how XML could be used here. Anyone. Be brave. No wrong answers here. Yeah, to describe the structures of the newspaper, yeah, and especially all kinds of contents that you would have in your newspaper. So just thinking about that, I'll directly go, actually I won't go to the next slide because it gives some other perspectives there as well. But yeah, that's a very, very good place to start. But if you would start structuring, okay, you need to understand what kind of a contents you would have in your newspaper. I guess you somehow want to present the structures of those. Maybe you want to create a DTD or schema for that. But what would be a starting point? Would you start creating it directly in your own organization yourself? Or would you look elsewhere? If you would be starting to doing that, would you actually start that from scratch? So I can already say that there are so many types of industry-specific XML languages that are a very, very good starting point for something like this. But anything else? Okay, so we want to understand the types of content we can present in XML, but what else? Then we kind of come to the XML as a document format. But it's not the only thing. We have been discussing quite many other things in this course. Maybe more examples. Okay, digital version online. Maybe some simple answers here. What would you do? Or what could you apply? Some XML basics here. XSL, there it comes. That's at least a good place to start with. Okay, let's go to some of the things that one might want to do. First of all, if we need some kind of a unified schema for the contents that we have, in this case it's the newspaper, whatever it includes. It's all kinds of news content that we want to somehow deliver, that we want to present. So, first of all, we need some kind of a unified schema design. And there is, in this case, an industry-specific language created that we might want to take as a kind of a starting point. Because newspapers usually, at least, aren't something too original. They have somehow the basic things they would anyways include in those. So, if it's something about domestic or international things, about something about leisure, sports, TV schedules, reviews about things. These are things that are kind of a common for news agencies, newspapers in general. So this is why we can apply a kind of a industry-specific, like a standard. There's an XML schema that is an international one. But we also might have some kind of extension needs. Maybe this specific schema is just too too broad or something that we need. Our newspaper has some kind of a cutting edge, some other type of content that this industry specific standard doesn't support, and that's why we can extend on it. And that's where also these namespaces come into play. So if we have a schema that we have that kind of follows the universal patterns, but then if we have something that is specific only to our own newspaper. With the use of namespaces, we can, in our own schema documents, we can just create and define the elements and attributes of our news content that are specific to us. And by giving it our own namespace and the name of our own namespace, we can avoid that there's no name collisions. And that's the kind of a one way that we can start building on our own XML schema for our newspaper. But if one would start immediately from scratch, I mean, there's of course some big disadvantages that you cannot really then exchange any information between the existing platforms, but also maybe some additional platforms or some, if we are sometimes at some point merging up with a bigger news agency, it might be that then we have to start from scratch. I mean, we are quite surely then using some own created tag names, element structures, rules that aren't then like followed by some other. That's why there are industry specific like things created or universal that enable, same like in social media. If one service like wants to send a particular message to another, the other service must understand the basic grammar around it so that they understand what the each other is saying. So it also goes for a creation of schemas or creating from scratch. And somehow, like always starting from something industry-specific might be a good place and save a bit of a time and energy. But this is a very, very complex thing, actually. Like if you are creating something or extending some universal one. And this is also what we realized in this Open Scout project, because we knew that there's something universal, like a standard for describing learning materials online, so that you have always for all kinds of learning content, you have like the author, title, whatsoever, like some basic information about the document. But we needed something more specific. We wanted to actually online include some information about the didactical or pedagogical issues around those documents and some more information about the context where those like materials were used. And this wasn't supported by the universal one. We needed to create something of our own. And we thought that, okay, we just do it easily. We do it over one day or so. But actually, this is where it comes to, because we also need to, in that kind of a circumstances, you need to understand your customers or your end users, and you actually might need to do a bit more investigation before you go and just push out your own kind of a schema. This schema design was a kind of, it was still a kind of a long process that included the collaboration between different types of developers, but also some pedagogical experts, users, then the ones who are working with the schema itself. So these things aren't usually that fast to do. But if you have a kind of a universal one to start with, that's excellent. And if you think about for this news agency, you might have separate schemas for different types of content types within your newspaper. That's at least one way to go. But also something else that you might want to do is if you need this website digital online version, okay, there we have already identified within this course that there are quite a lot of these existing languages and frameworks that can support it. So if we want to use this approach of structured documents to enable this delivery of content to all kinds of devices, we again might want to think about the approach that we have the schema files. We have then the XML documents, which is kind of at the contents. When somebody is doing an interview or something, you have the content stored in all kinds of XML documents, and then you have separate XSL files to give it, for example, external presentation for a particular like a handheld device or in your web browser or so. So this is at least something that we could do. But also, what XML kind of enables us is to also think about different types of roles within the editorial process. And when we are thinking about the user or somebody working in the newspaper, they most likely aren't plugging into any code. They would never be seeing those XML tags. Because that's why you have developers and the ones who are creating the schema, and then you use some kind of online forms or something else where you actually fill in the content. The ones, let's say, like a reporter or somebody else would never be actually exposed to that XML code there behind. So this is actually some of the beauty when you are working with something like, it's not that complex, but still more like a complex issues is that from a user perspective, you always have workarounds, like for example by the use of XForms, which is also one extension to XML that enables you to just fill in a form, and that's how you actually fill the contents of your XML documents. Also, in our website, we could apply all kinds of XML-based languages like XHTML to give it the kind of a overall framework, and then the style sheet languages such as this XSL, where you can also use CSS as we discussed in the last lecture. And we might use actually some more complex frameworks then to apply some Ajax for some seamless integration between the just to make it more user-friendly, our website that we are creating. We might then want to also enable some type of bridging between existing services and applications just to make our website more enriched with all kinds of services that are out there that might be actually created by other news agencies or just by Twitter or whatsoever else that you want to plug into your own environment. And there, this service-oriented architecture also comes very, very handy. That is the focus of the next lecture. But also, we can also apply these news feeds by RSS and so on. And what is also very important about XML is the use of metadata for, and especially for news articles. So we have to store all kinds of information about the articles, about the reviews, TV schedules in our database. And there might be all kinds of information that, like, also we might want to expose for different purposes. Like, let's just say that we have, like we discussed last time, that we have some master documents, bigger documents about some news article or so that is stored in an XML document. We can then use XSL and XSL transformation to retrieve particular information of that news content, and just to give maybe a tiny sneak peek to the most discussed topics of today, but that we do some kind of a transformation, take out some substance of a bigger XML document and just give some, maybe on our front page, by the use of these XSL transformations, give some like extracted information online. So remember that it doesn't always have to be this, that you have an XML document and you always expose that as is. So with XSL transformations, you can actually take out some contents, and that the whatsoever output you are creating might be very, very different what the original one is. And this is also what you might be doing for your website. And of course, for organization, for archiving purposes, or organizational like tracking for performance or something, of course, all kinds of metadata that you have stored in your documents, it's very helpful. And there are all kinds of further possibilities to tie the XML solutions to existing infrastructure, or to build towards more open like environments in general, or then to other business units, or if you are a kind of subsidiary of something, you might also make some integration between like the environments that different organizations have. So there are all kinds of possibilities, and well, XML is there in the base. So think about some similar like examples in your mind, like some potential like problem scenarios from real life, and think how XML could help that. I think that's a very, very good preparation then for also for the exam, because there's most likely something similar where you have to think about some possibilities around that, but also some challenges. Okay, then let's just briefly go through these different examples of XML as a document format, metadata format, and data in the exchange format, and just a kind of a brief overview of what it enables as a kind of a last thing for this lecture, just a kind of a preparation also for the upcoming two lectures that we will have. If we think about XML as a document format, giving it a kind of a like a structuring XML or structuring bigger bundles of documents in a kind of a common format, we might have all kinds of examples from web publishing, like to these learning materials that I just briefly explained, but also all kinds of technical documentation in factories, dictionaries, and so on. And this is actually the kind of what XML was actually transferred from HTML some 20 years ago or 25 years ago. This was the kind of some of the basic usage during that time, especially to help out the giving like XML documents a common like a grammar constraints, for example, in the industry for all kinds of documentation they might have. But nowadays, of course, for web publishing and as a document management in organization, it's the kind of a very practical but very old-fashioned way of XML usage. So, okay, this we have been discussing many times, but when you have something like classes of documents, you can use DTD or schema to do that, and I guess this is rather clear at this point already. So, and if you need an external presentation, you can apply XSL. So, kind of a simple thing. And again, we have for XML as a document format, we have all kinds of universal standards that are created for web publishing, but also for different types of industries. And if you ever have to start forming or work in the document management in a particular organization, it's always a very good first step at least to check what is out there before you start creating something of your own. Because in many cases, you might not be aware of something and you end up, let's say, using months or weeks or like even half a year or something creating something that you would have had already out there as a starting point. So, but then if we think about XML as a metadata format, like metadata is information about data in general. So, and in a web era or the era of social media, it's very, very important that no matter what type of content we have online, that we have very, very rich metadata stored for all kinds of assets that we might have, from the about the creation of that particular data, the purpose of it, time and date, creator, and so on. It's not necessarily always that in a particular website that it will or environment that this metadata will become very meaningful for you, but when all of this information that you have online, when it's kind of a bundle to a bigger thing, let's just say that you are like researching like how social media is used in a particular organization. You have all kinds of environments that people use on a daily basis. But when we can also start understanding, like through the metadata that we have and to the usage information of these systems, we can start also understanding much better on what's happening behind. So how like people behave online, so that we can understand their usage better, but also that we can create better services for them. Let's say if it's about like some online like shopping or something, by the use of like the metadata that we have on types of information assets people are searching for and how they behave online, it also gives us better leverage then to create new services and give better recommendations for the users. So this kind of a recommender systems are very much depending on all kinds of metadata that is out there online. And Amazon or similar are very, very good examples of something like that. So, okay, I think I don't need to really explain what metadata in general is. So you might have all kinds of information about a particular document, where it's created and so on. But then where examples of metadata are also the schemas themselves. So that's where you can plug in and extract all kinds of information that are stored in the databases. So this is also what I discussed about that in this Open Scout project. We had a kind of a universal like schema for describing the learning materials, so learning objects in this case. So, and also what I explained is that it wasn't enough for us. So we needed to create something of our own. So to understand the logic behind this, I just want to give this example that as a basis, we have kind of a overall schema, some universal one. That's kind of a gives us the basic building block. But then we have some extension needs to describe teaching and learning context or cultural context of a student or a teacher. And we want to reflect that in our schema. We want to also like present that as some this kind of information for the users who are using this website that we have. Then we have our own schema created on top of that. Again, we still need to somehow make sure that these things discuss the same language. And what we did here is that we applied this XML schema as a kind of a, in the basis. And the Open Scout schema also applies this to the schema principles, and it just gives some further rules that we can then use to describe the metadata about the materials we have. So the logic that we used in this online platform is that we aren't actually collecting all of those materials in our own database. We are just collecting all kinds of metadata about these materials and the objects, the materials, no matter if they're videos or pictures or PowerPoints, they still stay in all of those databases where they already are. We just collect some information about them in a standardized way. And we need to also make sure that all of those databases that we extract, that we give a particular and unified schema to those, that we then, these users who are browsing through our portal, they still can use all of those like filters as you saw online. You can use the creation date, but also like the topic of or subject of that learning material, the format of it, or and so on. All of that we need to somehow reflect in our schema. So the XML files in this case are just metadata about the materials that are stored in different types of databases all around the world. This is one example how like XML can be used as like a metadata language, and how we can extend something that is out there and just like create some further rules for it to enable users to find like more accurate information. Because if we wouldn't have this metadata stored in a unified way, there wouldn't be really any way for us to find management-related material, because this was for management education, to find management-related information from very, very heterogeneous kind of databases that have their own ways of like declaring information. So we create a kind of a universal like a way of doing this, and that we also extract always this information from that database that the user can find this material faster and more accurate. So this is one example of XML as a metadata language. And still there are some problems with this, and that we might also want to discuss later on if you have some questions. But I mean, it's always that 2 years afterwards that we have done something, we have already identified much, much better ways of doing the same thing. And that's just because development goes so fast that these overall standards and whatsoever, they don't really always keep up. Because developers are finding better ways of doing things all the time. So just as a kind of a example of... Let's just put this. This is again when browser tries to interpret a schema file. As you see, it doesn't make much sense itself. But okay, let's same here. Okay, let's use the source. So in XML, all of the like the metadata about one. Let's just say the lecture materials for today, the slide set that I have. We might have one like a. XML document that describes the metadata of the slide set that I have. And what we used in Open Scout was this XML schema with some specific rules created around that. And this is just one particular XML document to describe the metadata of one slide set. So, and as you might remember, XML schema was created because DTD is just way too simple. You cannot define real constraints around that, and it doesn't understand these namespaces. Because here we extended a universal standard, and we gave our own own rules and constraints, and that's why we kind of created our own namespace here as well. And we always, within these XML documents that we have, we show what belongs to the original namespace, to the universal, and what is the one that we have been creating ourselves, just to avoid the name collisions and showing what is our path, what belongs to the universal one. And in this case, like this, this schema just points out, or this metadata file points out to one particular, like a document. So it just gives this, here it's given an external presentation for that metadata that we had in that document. And yeah, as I said, it's just to collect metadata. It's not to store the information itself. So in this case, we would have an external file, and for some reason, it's again a zip file. And I guess last time we discussed something about data security, and I think it's nice to have a data security like a course where you have a zip file like this pointed out to a external URL. So very good example. But anyways. Here we store information in a separate place, but we use the XML just to describe the metadata. So this is a particular example of XML as a metadata language. And yeah, why to use metadata? We already kind of discussed that. So to allow better information retrieval, to record information about the context where these have been created, and maintain access, and just support information exchange to different applications and environments. And then kind of at the topic XML as a data interchange language, which is the kind of a basis for two next lectures as well, is this is where XML is nowadays most frequently used, and this is also the basis of what was discussed is XML in social media. So when we have very different types of systems, data resources, but organizations, we need to somehow allow them to speak in a common format, and this is where XML came in. No matter if it's used globally or just locally within one organization. And when we're discussing XML as a data interchange format, we don't need to discuss about anything about style sheets or external presentation, because this is just to allow applications, machines to discuss with each other. And in many cases, the languages that are created for data interchange, they are rather simple, but then you might just have some problems because the environments that you deal with are just not following the same standards. They might not be compatible as such, so that's where you might have some issues. So some examples of XML data interchange format is the integration of systems by a common user interface, integration of services in a portal like this OpenScout one. What you see is one specific portal that with one user experience, but actually there are dozens of separate services that are created that actually discuss with it, and there are all kinds of communication happening between them all the time in the client and server side. And then the data exchange between software system within an organization or between organizations. These are all common examples. So in OpenScout, and also the SOAP, VSDL, these are discussed later on, but where XML is really applied as a data interchange language, is one example is adding tags, for example, to describe the learning content that enables you to find it better, or enables the community find information better and faster, so that you kind of just have a very, very common way of sending some basic information that when you're adding a tag, or when the server side returns the service reply. So it's something rather simple. Again, here are some namespaces involved, but it's just about what is being exchanged, who is the user who is doing that, to which learning object, to which learning material it refers to, and more, that's it. So it's a very, very common and simple envelope that is kind of just like pushed back and forth. But same in when you're adding ratings or when you're sharing some materials to other social media sites and so on, there are all kinds of ways how data interexchange is happening in this platform that I just showed. But I just want to raise a couple of main challenges, and that's also what was witnessed today in this with this use of external entities, is that even we cannot always really even envision the kind of problems we might get into in 2 years or 3 years when the development goes further, and because what is happening right now is that naturally there's this World Wide Web Consortium and similar that are standardization bodies that are focused on creating these languages further. But I mean, still the users, the developers themselves, they are finding all the time very innovative and fresh ways of applying these languages. And there are so radical development happening that these standards that are created, they just can't keep up. And this is one big problem, of course. And especially when you are deploying some universal or sector industry-specific standard, it might be that when you are applying it, it already tracks just way too much behind the development. And knowing those things when as a developer or working in schema design, it's of course hard work to also understand this. And when you are updating also deployed standards, Your specifications are specific, depending on other specifications, and changes in one causes the need to change the other as well. So these are common because the XML itself is just one base standard, but it, as you saw there in this one website, there are all kinds of extensions created that are dependent somehow on others. If it's about doing queries or doing transformations of XML documents, all of the changes, when it happens in some other, depending, a specification, it's just a cause and effect with both. I mean, if something stops here, it then stops in another one. And this is one challenge, but also it's one of the, still the, I would say, the beauty of XML, that in most cases these specifications are still standalone, even though this XPath, it's really this to navigate in XML document. It's very specific to XSLT standard, but they are still standing alone. So you can somehow modify and extend on one, without causing multiple changes into another. So, and that's why XML is extremely modular. Yeah, and all of the standardization, or when you are creating any kind of a organization-specific, let's say, grammar for your documents, it's just a lot of work, and between all kinds of stakeholders, and agreeing on document structures, relevant concepts, it's a challenging and it's a tedious process because everyone has their kind of a own opinions, and that's one of the reasons why this type of standardization usually, even though it's initiated now, it might be that the results are out there for the World Wide Web community only in 4 years or something like this. And people may have to change their working behavior and start dramatically when some new standards are taken up in the organization. So let's just say that if you have a particular user interface for working with your XML documents or your schemas or similar, but if there's something more radical happening behind, it might be that it causes some major changes also to this to the users of XML, not necessarily only on the developers. And the benefits might not be always shown to the people who do the actual work, if it's in the news agency or in working with some specifications in technical documentation in an organization. The ones who are applying this might only see problems, but they don't know what's actually happening behind. And this communication is sometimes very tedious in organizations. But then, again, this is what we discussed before as the kind of a last thing for this lecture, is to set some type of a borders for the course. because there's quite a lot of different concepts, details discussed about XML specific languages. So I think it's good to still go through it and have it here written for the ones who are just maybe watching, looking at the slides later on, is to what you should somehow take out of this course in general. And when it comes to this in-depth knowledge on XML as a data in the exchange language, or like working with Ajax or SOAP or something else, we don't expect you to be experts on this after this course at all, because many of these, they are just extensions to this basic XML specification. And this focus of this course is to really like master somehow the basics and to understand the boundaries, the possibilities of XML, and that you show that you understand some of the how XML is applied as a meta language to describe new languages, how you might take up something that is like industry specific and extended. So some of the conceptual issues are more important than mastering it or working it from a developer point of view, because that's also what is rather clear, is that there isn't a kind of a universal XML expert, even though some people might call themselves as a XML expert. But you still might work in a like a document management in an organization, be like your work might be very, very focused on creating a like a schema for your organization. But when it comes to developing something, you might have zero experience, and you don't need to have that, because it's you have four different types of expertise, different types of jobs. You still, XML might come very, very big part of your work, and then in those situations, it's important to understand also this basics. Where are the basics kind of a stop, and what kind of extensions you have, and what possibilities then you have for doing your work better, and that's what we want to enable within this course. So that's more or less when you're preparing, when you're reading about this, so looking at the well-formedness, validity, the basics about DTD XML documents, those are the very, very essentials that you should master like at the end of this course, and also show in the exam that you can do it. And this XML schema, namespaces, XSL, we have some like clues given or hints given in this assignment that you kind of have to pass, but that's kind of the level that we expect you to be at. So again, next two times are visiting lectures. So we had wanted to do 1 week pause from the assignments just to give you a bit more time for the last one, because this XSL example might or assignment might be a bit more tedious to some of you, at least last year, like it was. Even though now there's also some extra points from this SOAP assignment, so please spend some time for all of these. I mean, it really will pay off in the long run. And these are the two visiting lectures that are this Thursday and next Tuesday. So please be here, because I cannot guarantee that they also will give the rights for recording, because there might be some issues about that with some. So, but those will be highly interesting. And then week from now on Thursday, then there's the final assignment, and we can also do some kind of a course feedback and wrap up there. And already at this point, we really like to get your feedback on how to create this course better in a longer run, even though you all will of course pass this year, but still for develop this towards some kind of a better format even in the future. So just come and discuss with us and give your feedback also at the end of the course. That would be highly appreciated. So yeah, that's it for this lecture. So thanks for coming, and see you on Thursday.